Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Auckland Cricket Podcast. We're back after a World Cup final, and we've got, even though the World Cup is over, loads to talk about that competition. We're going to be delivering our World Cup team. We're going to be talking about a few awards that we might be handing out and doing a bit of a wrap of the whole thing. We've got IPL to talk about, which is coming up any day now. We are also coming to the end of Plunkett Shield. We're going to have a bit of a chat about that. There's some Auckland cricket stuff going on, end of year awards going on. We're going to talk about that as well. There's loads to talk about tonight. And joining me to do all of that, Neil Rye and Jamie Lloyd. Welcome, gentlemen.
Yep.
I'm excited.
It is very exciting. Firstly, World Cup. Let's just briefly focus on the game before we get into the whole who wins the silliest hat award kind of stuff. But what do we think of that, gents? Is this a new dawn for... Well, not new dawn. They've been strong for a while. But will India kick on from here and become the dominant force in one-day cricket and potentially others?
Not until they sort their bowling lineup out. I think they'll always be there or thereabouts, or at least for the foreseeable future, because their batting lineup is simply so strong.
Yuvraj was, I guess, the revelation of the tournament for them, wasn't it?
Because he's promised so much for so long, and, you know, fitness issues and form issues and other tournaments have seen him kind of, I guess, let himself down more than anything. But yeah, he really delivered this tournament, which was great. And then, you know, you look at the rest of the batting lineup. Even if he hadn't performed, they were hardly going to struggle.
It's useful, isn't it? And that was an awesome innings by Dhoni in that final, wasn't it?
Yeah, come with the hour, old cliche, but... Yeah, I think Cricket Info summed it up best. Just going back to Yuvraj, they had a write-up on him and mentioned that in that game against Australia, when, you know, the game was in the balance and he came out and scored a half century, hit the winning runs and got down on one knee and just let out a massive scream. And that was as if it was almost his, you know, coming of age. He'd finally sort of become a man kind of thing, as Cricket Info put it. Yeah, so it'll be interesting now to see if he can kick on, because, yeah, as we all know, he's got all the talent in the world. But, yeah, no, Dhoni, incredible innings, really. I mean, Gambier as well. Jeepers, yeah, the two with him.
He gets forgotten a wee bit sometimes, doesn't he, amongst all the other rock stars, Gambier.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they were the two that, up until now, hadn't really performed. And then, you know, the others didn't get a bunch of runs between them, and those two step up, which is... You know, again, harping back to it, the luxury they have of, you know, every single guy in that top seven is an absolute world beater. And if one or two of them come off, which those two were the two this time, then they're going to beat most teams on their day. And as it turned out, that was what happened.
It's a pretty commanding performance, isn't it? So now, what, 277 for four in a final when the pressure's on. To pull that kind of thing out of the bag. So well done, India.
Got to wonder about Sri Lanka's tactics. Is in four changes from the semi and only one of them enforced, and dropping Ajantha Mendis for Siraj Randeep, who'd been called in as cover. So he hadn't played a game the whole tournament. Mendis had gone at something like four runs and over the whole tournament, and he gets dropped for him. Yeah, not sure what the idea behind that was, but I mean, yeah, that didn't help from the start.
I think that was the Sri Lankan president or prime minister having a word in the coach's ear, perhaps. A la Pakistan politics. I don't know. I've got no idea. This is just purely individual views and not the views of Auckland cricket, obviously. Anyway, let's move on to sort of wrapping up the whole World Cup, and let's kick off perhaps with our team of the tournament. I know some of you boys have been doing some research on this and having a bit of a think. So from the top,
Sachin and Dilshan as openers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, agreed there.
Yeah.
Sangakkara at three.
Agreed.
This is where it becomes interesting, and I think there'll be a few points of difference here. I'd be going as... I'd have De Villiers and Yuvraj, definitely, but need another batsman in there, I'm not sure.
De Villiers at four.
Possibly, depending on who else makes it, but De Villiers and Yuvraj are definites for me. Thoughts?
I'd probably go De Villiers, Trott, Yuvraj. I think in the Crick Info, all the talking Crick Info is they've left Trott out because he didn't score quick enough or whatever. But I think that's bollocks, and he scored almost, you know, considering the number of games he played, obviously they were knocked out in the quarters. He was leading run scorer up till that point, I believe. He had a fantastic tournament. I think Crick Info actually picked Jay Wardner in the team ahead of him, who, you know, if you look at average runs per game, he only really came right in the last few matches. Trott had a absolutely fantastic tournament. I think you really have to find a place for him there somewhere. And I think, you know, Yuvraj, with his hitting ability and his place as an all-rounder these days, could probably drop down to six, and you could bung Trott in there at five, which means also got, for balance of the batting lineup, you've got Sangakkara at three, who's, you know, is maybe a bit more sensible than some of the other stroke makers. De Villiers is probably more of a stroke maker, really goes hard at the ball. Then after him, you've got another more sensible, you know, nudge it around guy in Trott, and then you've got your Singh, big boom guy coming in at
What about a Bolter and Ryan Tintiscada in there in your top six?
Potentially, but I don't think he commands a place as a batsman, to be honest. As in going on boom from the World Cup, he scored two centuries, sure. But yeah, I think these guys here probably performed, you know, a bit better. And his bowling was completely crap this tournament, to be honest. So, I mean, yeah, he wouldn't disgrace the side, obviously, but I don't think it'd warrant a place in there.
No batsman from Pakistan?
No.
Is that a piss take?
Well, they were consistent there for a while. Yeah, fell away at the end, admittedly.
None of the guys really scored heavily. They just, it was bits and pieces, you know, to get just enough runs, really.
None of them scored a century, I don't think. I mean, Afridi would probably walk into the side at seven, but obviously that's for his bowling and, I suppose, his potential to hit rather than any exploits in the World Cup with a bat.
Okay, so you've got top six of Tendulkar, Dilshan, Sangakkara, De Villiers, Trott and Singh. Useful. Bowlers, 7 to 11.
8 to 11. If Afridi's at 7.
True, if we've picked Afridi already, yep.
Yeah. Obviously, Zaheer's got to be in there.
Got to have wicketkeeper in there too, by the way.
Sangakkara.
True.
Or De Villiers.
Yep, okay, we've got that covered. So, bowlers.
Zaheer would have to be there. I reckon, yeah.
Oh, on form, Tim Southee.
Yeah, exactly. I was going to say, my Cricket Info went to whatever the official team didn't pick him, but...
They had him as 12th man.
Yeah. Southee, he took 3 wickets in every game, except for 3, I think. But in those 3 games, he took 1 wicket and went for less than 5 and over, which for an opening bowler is a pretty good run rate.
Although, to be fair, they did pick Steyn, who got knocked out at the quarterfinal stage, so played one less game and actually had a better average than Southee.
I'd have Steyn in my team
every
time.
Yeah, I'd probably have Steyn in my team ahead of Southee. Having said that, you know, Southee's very close. I thought he had a great tournament. And the other one who maybe his record doesn't quite stack up would be Malinga. I mean, some of those spells he had were just so destructive. And again, like you said earlier about Tendiscardi, he certainly wouldn't disgrace the team.
If you had Malinga, though, that means we haven't got a recognised spinner in there.
Although we've got Afridi, who was a leading wicket taker.
True.
But
you're right, I'd leave out Malinga. And I put in, this will probably be a very arguable point, to hear from South Africa.
I give you that.
Yeah.
He played really well and was very effective.
Because he missed a few games through injury as well, didn't he?
He
took 14 wickets from 5 games, I think. So
I think Crick Info had Murali in there, but I don't think he did a heck of a lot in the tournament, really.
I don't think he had nearly the effect that he's had on previous tournaments and on previous series, so no, I wouldn't go there. Well, that's still pretty useful. Tendulkar, Dilshan, Sangakkara, De Villiers, Trott, Singh, Afridi, Zaheer, Southee, Steyn and Malinga or Tahir, depending on which day of the week we decide to pick the team. Yeah, I think they'd do us proud.
Bowling option.
Yeah, useful, isn't it? Alright, so that's our team of the tournament. Any other awards that we feel like dishing out for meritorious or not achievement throughout the tournament?
The Damian Martin Award for the shot of the tournament. I suppose there's a few contenders, obviously Dhoni 6 to finish off the tournament. A couple of the cover drives that AB de Villiers played through the tournament were actually quite Damian Martin-esque.
Do these qualifiers have to look Damian Martin-esque?
Oh, no, not at all. Not at all. There's just
what about Roscoe's piling a few sixes against Pakistan? One of those has got to be in there, doesn't it?
Those filthy slogs,
though,
really.
Exactly, yeah. They were cricket shots.
Possibly that first one that went backward of square, which, the hand speed was pretty phenomenal, and it flew over the boundary. But the others were just, you know, waist-high full tosses that
Having got out to a few waist-high full tosses in my time, they're a lot trickier to play than they look.
Yeah,
one that has to be in there as well is Hiral Patel, the Canadian opener, when he slapped Sean Tate over extra cover for 6 off a ball that was almost 150k.
I remember it not at all, but okay, I'll take your word for that.
Oh,
yep.
Yeah, he opened the batting, obviously. Well, not obviously, but yeah, he did. And he scored, I think, 40-ish. No, he got a half century, didn't he? In really quick time. And he slapped Lee and Tate out of the attack. And that one there, 148, 49k an hour. And just, off the back foot, slapped him over extra cover.
I tell you what, I can't remember the specific shot, but it was that last over against Canada. Admittedly, okay, it's Kings Canada, so that slightly devalues the shot. But James Franklin, in that last over, he scored 31, and he had some enormous sixes, and one went, must have been 50 rows back, sort of over mid-off, I think. It was an incredible shot.
Yeah.
Much as it really pains me to say that James Franklin could have the shot of the tournament, but credit where credit's due.
Yeah.
I can't think of any shots that stick out to me, to be fair.
Well, I suppose the one that it'll forever be remembered for is Tony's six, because they won him the World Cup, and yeah, just under the, you know, circumstances.
Under pressure. It's a pretty ballsy way to finish off a tournament and win the World Cup for your nation.
Mm-hmm.
You'd have to, sentiment would go with that one, wouldn't it?
Yeah, indeed, yeah.
I'd like to possibly nominate the underachieving team of the World Cup. And I can think of my openers straight off the bat, which would be Chris Gayle and Brendan McCullum. Both promised a lot.
I thought you were doing team, and I was thinking, for once, we can't put New Zealand in there.
No.
Okay, yeah, underachievers, right, okay.
Yeah, team of underachievers. So, yeah, Gayle and McCullum certainly to open.
Well, who else then? We've only picked one New Zealander so far. We must have a couple more. Yes, you can't pick Jacob Oram this time.
No.
But anybody
Daniel
else?
Daniel Vettori?
See, this is what happens when you say that kind of stuff, Jamie.
Yeah.
You choke on your words.
Jesse Ryder.
Yeah, he got 80 odd, didn't he?
Yeah,
but that was about
that
it.
One game. Yeah. Graham Smith got to be in there.
By his standards, yeah.
Yeah.
Very disappointing, wasn't it?
A few of the West Indies, to be fair.
Mm.
But did we have high hopes for them? Is
yeah,
it disappointing if you already think they're crap?
I had a few hopes in them.
You had a bet on them, didn't you?
Yeah.
pretty much the whole Australian team.
Mm.
Maybe bar Shane Watson and Brett Lee, the rest of them.
The entire Bangladesh side?
Yeah.
Yeah. Shakib Al Hassan.
Yeah.
In their home as such, tournament.
No, it's definitely...
The tournament itself, perhaps. No, that's a bit harsh. It wasn't as bad as the last one. Didn't feel like it dragged on quite so long, although it was still pretty damn long. And there wasn't the ridiculous farce at the end like there was at least at the tournament in the West Indies event, playing into the dark. And while we're talking of tournaments and previous and current and future tournament, let's have a quick chat, because I think there's been quite a bit going around on the airwaves, on the internet, etc., wherever. The decision not only to reduce, which was public knowledge, to 10 teams for the next World Cup, but we'll talk about that in a second. But now the decision, which has only just come out the last day or two, that there will be no qualifying and it will be a cast iron 10 teams, 9 test playing nations plus Zimbabwe. That's what's got everybody's back up. And yeah, it's an interesting one, isn't it? I know there's some differing viewpoints around this table, so kick it off, somebody.
I think we've kind of agreed, to be honest, but yeah, I agree with not simply just allowing the non-test playing nations in.
So we have agreement, I think everybody here thinks that it should go to 10 teams, don't we? That it needs to be a shorter tournament and fewer teams.
I reckon it should be more than 10, but yeah, 12 is probably a good number, I reckon. But
12 makes it really impossible for everybody to actually play each other, doesn't it?
Oh yeah, if we're looking at playing that, then yeah, definitely 10's ideal number. I just reckon that those teams need the chance to qualify. What other
If you had 10 teams, you'd get all of them to qualify?
I suppose you'd have to, because all those 10 are test playing nations, because Zimbabwe's been reinstated now, so you know you can't simply pick two of them.
But rugby sort of does it like that, don't they?
Yeah, they do. Yeah.
Or do they still do that? They used to have, it was only the top four, wasn't it? And everybody outside that had to do some ridiculous...
Mm. Well, you could do that.
Romania.
Ten teams... The top four, maybe from the last World Cup, automatically qualify. I'm just saying that because New Zealand made it.
I agree.
And then the other six have to go through some kind of a qualifying process. And it would probably be, the lower you get, probably the more intense that process is. So your numbers 9 and 10 are probably having to play quite a few games and beat a few teams to make sure they get there.
Mm.
Whereas your 5 and 6 and 7 and 8 probably almost get there by right. But
I do agree that it's harsh basically just to close the door on all those other teams totally. I think they deserve some right to at least have a crack at qualifying. It's going to be pretty tough though if for the likes of Ireland and Holland, who play, as far as I'm aware, next to no test playing nations in between a 2020 or a one day World Cup, to then get up, say, for if it's a one off qualifying tournament where they come up against the West Indies and possibly New Zealand or other teams, even given the inconsistency of those teams on the basis, you think that's hard work, but you've got to at least give them a chance, I think, to, rather than just say, see you later boys, enjoy.
For me personally, 10 teams is the right number, because then everyone can play everyone, and the, you know, going back to the 92 World Cup, which is the World Cup I remember most fondly, that's how it worked. It was a fantastic tournament. You got to see great cricket basically in every match. And, you know, I think the 2020 World Cup is possibly a better place for some of those, you know, for more teams.
Yeah.
It's a shorter format. You can, you know, there's no reason why you couldn't be playing a game every other day. One day, as you can understand why teams are only playing, you know, having 2, 3, 4 days sometimes in between matches, because it's harder on the body. But 2020, you can pump through it. You can have multiple games a day. You can have more teams. You can play pools, and the winners of pools go through to knockouts and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But for the 50-over format, I think 10 teams is perfect. But the guys, the next tier down, so you're for the next, you know, the next tier down is your Islands, your Kenyas and Canadas and all those guys. They need to have really meaningful competitions in behind the World Cup. So whether it is a qualifying tournament of some description or whatever it happens to be, there needs to be some really good competition for those guys so they can still develop. I mean, going to a World Cup and getting smashed is not developing. It's just having a chance to perhaps pull off a fluke. But if you're playing teams who you're having decent competition against, that's when you are going to develop. And then you might get the chance to knock off a Zimbabwe and sneak into the World Cup as the 10th qualifier. And I think that's got a lot more meaning than just being there because you've beaten Afghanistan on your way to sneaking in at number 16 or something.
Not that we're belittling Afghanistan, the pod's favourite team. But, okay, I think that's probably enough on the World Cup for now and probably for the next 4 years. Yeah. So let's move to what's next on the agenda pretty much in terms of world cricket, which is the IPL, which somebody told me today, I believe, starts in 2 days' time.
Starts tomorrow night.
Well, who would have known? Not me, anyway. So, I am reliably informed that the two gentlemen with me here are well endowed with information on the IPL. So come on, enlighten me, fellas. Who's who? Who's where? And who's going to win? Have they still got the same number of teams? Are the teams still the same ones as last year? Because there was controversy last year, wasn't there, about teams getting chucked out?
It's different. I know this because my sister happens to be doing a project on it. One of the teams got kicked
handy.
Out. Yeah, very handy. Yeah, there's two new teams, and one from last year got booted or something.
Yeah, I think so.
Right.
Couldn't tell your names. Jamie might be able to.
No.
Excellent.
But
Excellent.
I also know that there are two new teams. That's the extent of my knowledge. But interesting that a few New Zealanders have been picked up by IPL franchises in the last week. Tim Southey on the back of his performance at the World Cups got a contract. Jacob Oram's also snuck back in there.
So how does that work? Because I thought they have the big auction and that's when they choose all their players, but do they then get extra rights to sign up people before the comp starts?
Well, they don't use all their money obviously at those auctions,
but they don't obviously buy up all their, like, they must have a playing roster,
yeah,
as well, mustn't they?
Yeah,
okay, so they leave some space to spare for just such occasion.
So there's quite a few New Zealanders involved now. You've got Styris, McCullum, both McCullums, Vittori, who's captain of his team this year, James Franklin, Jacob Oram.
James Franklin, I hope they haven't bought him as an all-rounder.
Yeah, he is. He's an all-rounder. He actually got quite a decent dose of money because he was bought at the auction on the back of his fairly good tour to India. So, you know, if you're going to score runs somewhere and you want to get a contract in the IPL, it's in the subcontinent.
I feel like pinning them an email now, just a word to the wise.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So, yeah, I mean, I think it was the Chennai Super Kings who cleaned up last year with Dhoni as the captain and Stephen Fleming as the coach, I believe. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Right. I think that is right, yeah.
So I'd imagine they go into this year as favourites again. But my heart is always with the Kolkata Knight Riders, who look like they've done some fairly decent off-season buying. Yeah, they've got, I think Gambia might be their captain. And his name, the all-rounder from India, who got dropped for the last few
Pathan.
Games. Yeah, Pathan is in there as well. So a couple of fairly decent names there and a few more floating around. But it does actually pay to jump online and just have a look at some of the team lists, because it really is a bit of a who's who of international cricket with a bunch of absolute no-name Indians thrown in there as well. And, you know, I've become a bit of a fantasy league junkie this year. I'm doing IPL fantasy league as well, so might be a bit of fun to have a go at that. I find that's the best way to actually get to know players in competitions for someone who doesn't actually have Sky TV.
Could be interesting. I'm resolved this year to actually watch a game of IPL while the tournament is on. I don't think I've actually achieved that in the first 2 years of competition.
A bit of a laugh reading on Cricket Info. I think Jeff Marsh coaches a team over there. And so at the auction, Sean Marsh, obviously his son, expecting a bid from his dad. Sean Marsh didn't get a bid. His younger brother Mitchell, who hasn't even played for Australia yet, got a bid. So yeah, Sean came out and said that obviously, you know, it's apparent who the favourite son is. Thought that was worth a laugh.
Ooh. Family Christmas around the Marsh family could be fun this year. All right, we'll leave the IPL there and we'll move on to domestic shores, where Plunkett Shield, basically domestic cricket, has finished as of today. Plunkett Shield wrapped up. Canterbury took it out with an outright victory over ND down in Rangiora, which will keep Lee Jamon happy. He was slightly irate that he thought that the Aces and the Stags might have been doing something dodgy down in Napier, which of course wasn't the case at all. We're just trying to make an interesting game of it. The Aces drew in the end. It was rained out in the last day, so fairly damp end to their season and to what has been a pretty disappointing Plunkett Shield campaign. I guess the big problems for the Aces over that time has mainly been about scoring runs. And any comments on the season, lads? It's not a huge surprise, I don't think, considering the losses they had at the beginning of the season and not securing somebody like Johan Myburgh that we were going to have, who was going to be that sort of rock in the middle there.
Yeah, not a lot of surprises. Well, I mean, you look at our, you know, we were so successful in the T20 and the one-day campaign, the HIV Cup. And you look at the guys that we had for those campaigns, the likes of Lou Vincent, Jimmy Adams,
Andre.
Yeah, Andre, Colin Munro, even Ronnie Hira to a lesser extent. Those guys were almost the core of the team that was so successful in the shorter formats. And none of them play the longer format because it's not their game or they've headed back offshore. So there's actually huge change in the playing roster going into the Plunkett Shield. And you're right, they just simply haven't been able to score enough runs. It's maybe a little bit surprised that they haven't tried to go outside of that 13 or 14 that they've kind of stuck with throughout the season, considering they've really struggled to score with guys like even Greg Hay and some of the other Kachopas, a whole tribe of them, scoring runs all over the shop. Possibly a couple of others could have come in to have a go. But I think it was just kind of one of those seasons as well.
To be fair to them, though, I think there's not a huge number of guys really strongly putting their hands up. And yeah, sure, maybe Greg Hay or Craig Kachopa, but you'd be chucking in even, like, Craig Kachopa, brilliant player, had a great season. Be chucking in a really young guy into an environment where a bunch of other young guys have been struggling to do the job, and I can sort of see why they might not do that. And Greg Hay, although he's played a lot of domestic cricket, hasn't exactly set the club scene on fire this year. So I think that the real disappointment is that the guys who have the ability, and we talked about at the beginning of the season, know they're talented and they will score runs, just haven't been able to put their hand up, to use a cliche, and kick on. Jesus, stop right there. And really, really prove how good they are and put hundreds on the board, because these guys, you know, Anurag Kitchen, Colin de Grandhomme, Andrew de Border, Jeet Raval, I mean, both of those last two got tons in the last game, but it was all a bit too little too late. So they can definitely do it. It's just one of those seasons where it definitely didn't happen for them. But hey, next year, whole new world. While we're speaking about who did what and who did it well, we'll just touch very quickly on Auckland Cricket of the Year awards coming up next week. Actually, a week today, Thursday, the 14th of April. It's where we hand out the big awards for Bowler of the Year, Batsman of the Year, and the overall Cricketer of the Year awards. Plenty of success to talk about there with the HIV Cup and the one-day stuff. Very quickly, boys, who do we think it's going to be? Bowler of the Year, Batsman of the Year for the guys, and who might win the overall one?
Oh dear, I think Bowler of the Year is probably the clearest. I think you have to go Chris Martin for that, to be honest.
He has been on fire of late, hasn't he?
He's got a number of 5-wicket bags and has been pretty consistent throughout, certainly the Plunkett Shield and the games he was available for one days and T20s. But Young Player of the Year and Batsman and even overall, to be fair, are a little bit murky. I would suggest potentially Andrew de Border, Batsman of the Year, and that he got a century early on and then finished, and I think he got a 90 early on as well, and finished the last game of the season with 150 not out. Having said that, he only played Plunkett Shield and wasn't hugely successful in between those two decent knocks. But, I mean, who else is there?
There's not many guys who played all three forms of the game who scored big runs. Really, which does make it an interesting one to choose. Definitely, I agree, the Batsman of the Year.
Throw Lou Vincent in there?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, because while he was here, he was on fire, really. He had a couple of... Well, actually, he got dropped for a couple of games during the HIV Cup, but when he got a chance again, he came back, scored a 70, I think. and then was really good for the last few games. And then once the one day, he was brilliant in that. Two scores in excess of 150, and at least another one or two scores as well. So he'd definitely be in the mix. Maybe Tim McIntosh, big ton in the one day is, and another ton in the one day is actually, plus not 100 in the Plunkett Shield, but a few 50s as well. Overall, tough call to make, but...
Did any of their hearts have a good season? They might get the overall.
Yeah, they could be struggling there, I feel. It was a pretty tough times for the Hearts this year. Fifth and sixth is not a great return in a 16 competition. So
that's Neil laughing, PS.
Yeah. But it's going to be a great night next week. Interesting to see who wins, and we'll have all the details on the website straight up the next day. That is pretty much our lot for another week. We will be back next week with a whole bunch more cricketing info, trivia, excitement, and general chit-chat.
Just before we go, can I just make mention of Neil Wagner,
his effort yesterday
or whenever it was. It's actually a world record, never been done before in first-class cricket. 5 wickets in an over. First 4 balls were wickets, then a dot ball and a wicket for the 6th ball of the over as well. So a 5 wicket maiden, including a double hat-trick, which is 4 wickets in a row. Fantastic effort from a guy who up until that point hadn't actually taken a wicket in the day, or in the innings I should say, but by far and away the leading wicket taker in the Plunkett Shield. And the most exciting news of all is he will be available for the Black Caps for our next tour. So finally the best bowler in the country is actually available to play for the Black Caps, which is quite exciting.
Yeah, let's hope he holds on to that form, because he had a brilliant start to the season in Plunkett Shield and then lost the plot completely in the short forms of the game before obviously coming back into it at the end. So, yep, all power to him that he's going to be in for next year. And before we go, actually, I'd just very quickly mention National Club Champs going on at Cornwall Park all this week. We've got another 3 days to go, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, finals on Sunday. Interesting at the moment, it's been shared around. Karori, the defending champions, are back. They got up and won today, so they've got a win on the board. Let's see who else. East Christchurch Shirley, always strong. They've got a couple of wins on the board. I think they might have picked up another one today. So, yeah, if you get a chance down this weekend, there'll be some great cricket down at Cornwall Park, both Saturday and Sunday. So get on down there. As I've said, we are done for another week, and we'll be back with a whole bunch more next week. So thanks very much for listening. Until then, we will catch you in 7 days' time.